Meow. 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 Meow with me, Bill. Meow. 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 Hello, freedom fiends. Lighting fires of liberty in your heart with magic microphones of anarchy. Regular host Michael Dean couldn't be with us tonight. He's beaming anti-state propaganda directly into the brains of listeners elsewhere. I'm Derek J. I'll be calming the hamster in your brain tonight. With me is the lovely Bill Bupert of ZeroGov.com.
Hey, Derek, how are you this evening?
I'm awesome, Bill. I am so great. I'm going to need to hear more meowing from you, though, in the next segment. I didn't get nearly enough this time.
Well, actually, I have three words for you in regard to that, and that's what price dignity.
Okay, fair enough. I agree.
I'm going to let you monopolize the meowing.
I have no dignity of which to speak, so I will meow away this evening. You know, speaking of dignity, I'm about to lose some tomorrow. I am going to court against the Keene police here in my local area here in Keene, New Hampshire, where I was denied a concealed carry license. They said no. You can't put a gun in your pocket. Sure, you could carry an AR-15 or an AK-47 on your back, or both, totally loaded, walking down the street. That's fine. But see, if you want to put a jacket on and cover those up, now that's a problem, and we cannot give you permission. So I had to take them to court over that. That's going to happen in a few hours. Very exciting.
Well, so that's great, even though I'm... On principle, I'm against concealed carry licenses, because what you're doing is you're begging the question. I understand what you're doing, Derek, but you are begging the question by saying, sure, I object to it, but I am going to go and ask permission to do what I'm granted by my natural rights to do in the first place.
Oh, no. See, you don't understand, Bill. I used to think like you, but then I was corrected. I went to the House of Corrections for not obeying all of the government's edicts. And now I've changed my tune. It's comply, kneel before the government at every opportunity, and ask permission. And it's worked out great. See, they've said no. The process works. Yeah, it's strange. It's really weird. And I'm hoping to live stream the court proceedings. New Hampshire's a really unique place when it comes to courtrooms, because... especially here in Keene, you can just walk in with a video camera. It pretty much doesn't matter who you are. You just set up and start rolling. And that's not so in most places. You're going to get kicked out.
It puzzles me, because New Hampshire is a shall issue state. It's not a no issue or a may issue state. It's a shall issue state. And I'm really surprised that even the legal system there, as deluded as they tend to be with their own power madness, that they would go against the grain of their own edicts in that regard.
Yeah, it's weird to me. It seems short-sighted on the side of the chief of police here, Ken Miola, who I think really stepped in it this time by denying a peaceful activist the right to defend himself. Anyway, I'll have more info on that after the hearing. It'll just be the first of many, so updates at my website, derekj.me, and hopefully a live stream there tomorrow.
That's DerekJ.me.
That's the one. So you were telling me earlier today about a man named Ali who survived a massacre from ISIS. He was like on the receiving end of a firing line and somehow survived to tell the story. What's that about?
Oh, it's just grueling. The New York Times, normally like the Wall Street Journal, a very pro-war journal, especially under the auspices of this Democrat President Obama. But I was really surprised at them taking him seriously and at his word of what happened to him, what he experienced. What many in the audience have seen is that over the past few months, ISIS, ISIL, or they refer to themselves now as IS, the Islamic States in Syria, Iraq, and parts of Iran, and probably soon to be discovered in other places to include the Horn of Africa, they've been marching Iraqi army soldiers, Air Force soldiers, whatever the case may be, quite literally to their death. And the videos are available all over the web. It's not for the faint of heart to watch these. But this guy, Ali, managed somehow to fake his death, to act as if he was dead. And in the middle of the night, as you and I conversed about earlier, with his hands tied behind his back, escape across the river to the island, across the river again into Sunni territory. It just so happens that Sunni and Shia are the major sects, as it were, S-E-C-T-S, of Islam.
And he's
in
a
the
Shia.
Middle East.
He's a Shia. And then he crossed over to
Sunni territory. IS is Sunni.
And the IS is Sunni. So the Islamic State, he's thinking, great. Now I've crossed the river, I've escaped ISIS, and now I'm in a bunch of ISIS territory. So all these people...
And they helped him.
Are they going to be friendly to me? Are they going to kill me on sight?
And well, they didn't.
He walked through the desert for, what, 3 days before he finally said, all right, I got to get something to eat. I got to talk to one of these people. A guy gave him, what, a couple of tomatoes, a couple of nibbles, bites to eat, and a warning saying, if you go north, they're going to kill you. If you go south... Yeah, they're going to kill you. And to the west is a river. To the east, they're going to kill you. So I don't know what you can do, but good luck.
Now, you're going to provide a link to this on Michael's Freedom Fiends website so people can visit this 10-minute video, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the notes will be in the show notes at freedomfiends.com.
You know, you were mentioning earlier that Joe Jarvis over Vigilant Vote, which I urge the entire audience to go to if they get a chance, had written a rather satirical article saying that IS instead of ISIS or ISIL is a statist wet dream. And that's quite literally the case, in my opinion, in a more sober mindset. And he does a great job of drawing parallels with this, because what we have here when we go back to the story of Ali is that Ali wasn't saved by the government of any type. He was saved by individuals who had a heart and individuals whose moral compass told them that people shouldn't be maimed or killed just because of the way they think or who they worship.
Well, that's right. And he does blog over at vigilantvote.com, where he's writing in response to an MSN News article about the Islamic State in northern Syria. And he goes on something. I think it's great. It's some satire here. So he says, if you follow the blog, you probably know that I see real merit in the possibility of a society organized without government. That's why I want to highlight some similarities between ISIS and the USA. If people think the Islamic State is bad, they should also realize these same negatives exist in the various potencies within our own government. Then he quotes the MSN News article about the merciless battlefield tactics that ISIS uses, its imposition of its austere vision of Islamic law. And he responds, well, they may be murdering people, but without them, who would keep the electricity on and provide water, build the roads, and teach the children? The same goes for ISIS.
The answer is people will.
Exactly. People will. There's no trouble here. He says, quoting again from the article, even activists opposed to the group describe how it had built up a structure similar to a modern government in less than a year unto its chief. Reuters journalists are unable to visit the area for security reasons. And then he comments, well, to be fair, it's probably safer for journalists than St. Louis. And that's right. Journalists have been completely attacked within U.S. territory. It's not like this is just some war zone off on a foreign land. The government here at home attacks journalists. So
guns screwed in their faces and their lives threatened just because they're trying to report.
Yeah, so it's almost a tongue-in-cheek joke, but then literally it is the same. It is the same. Like ISIS and the USA government are doing the same things. Obviously, there's a difference to scale. Like what we talked about, the real terrorism that Ali faced, that man who survived execution, that's different. You know, people being marched along is not the same as just pointing guns at journalists and making them run. But it's not too different, is it?
You know, I've got to tell you, there's one other thing that we have to draw from this, and that's what I call the puffs of smoke fallacy, which is this. all of these videos out there with IS are horrific. There's no doubt of it. And I condemn them all. But for Americans to puff out their chest and say, we've got to do something about this. This is just awful. This is just, it's so bad. Yet for a dozen plus years in Iraq, Afghanistan, the Horn of Africa, and all over the globe, we've used very advanced technology to snuff out the lives and maim people, men, women, and children, in all these places in a very anonymous and antiseptic fashion. What Americans cringe at right now is this is so personal. The knife is drawn across the throat. We see people executed by gunshot while they're laying down with their hands tied behind their backs. Well, how is that much different in the final deliverance from using airstrikes or drone strikes or bombings or engaging in warfare in their villages?
It's a great question. The MSNBC article writes that prices are kept low. Well, that's good. Traders who manipulate prices are punished, warned, and shut down if they're caught again. Well, that sounds like a modern government. The group has also imposed Islamic taxes on wealthy traders and families. Quote, we're only implementing Islam. Zakat is an Islamic tax imposed by God. And Joe Jarvis, he writes, guys, the tax was imposed by God, okay? And it's just going to affect the super wealthy, because at some point, I think they've earned enough. Also, greedy businessmen are not paying their fair share and are totally gouging the consumers. So they need a government to set prices and make sure that no one is being taken advantage of. And honestly, the Islamic State ain't so bad. Look at what they do with the proceeds of their holy taxes. Fighters receive housing, including homes confiscated from local non-Sunnis or from government employees who fled the area, as well as $400 to $600 per month. Not bad for all the fighters in the ISIS regime. Enough to pay for a basic lifestyle in Syria's poor northeast. One fighter said that families were given money. A widow may receive $100 for herself and for each child she has. Well, what a coincidence! Joe was just blogging about how the U.S. confiscates homes from political dissidents and awards them to our fighters here in the U.S. We call it civil asset forfeiture. And who knew we had so much in common with the Islamic State?
I think it's brilliant. I love it.
It is. It is brilliant because all the things that they're doing, the U.S. does as well. It just calls it by a different name. You know, it's like the difference of scale. People pointing out these guys are terrorists. I mean, yes, they are. It needs to be pointed out the terrorism that's happening at home. That didn't Jesus have a quote about this? Like, don't point out the splinter in your brother's eye if you've got a log in your own. I think that's relevant here in the U.S. today. Screaming about terrorism. This is Freedom Fiends.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains, because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Here with you, bringing you stories of real terrorism from ISIS. The Islamic State is wreaking mayhem all across the globe, mostly in Iraq, though, and Syria. It's horrible. It's horrible what's going on, Bill. I can't stand it. And we heard of a story of a massacre survivor who got lucky. They thought ISIS thought they shot him in the head, but it turns out he was able to pretend to be dead, then swim across a river, find some shelter, and he made it. He made it out to go back to his family and his loved ones. Such a touching story. Now, luck worked out well for him, but there are probably some things we could learn from his story. Just in case, you know, it's not like anyone, it's not like most people are going to end up having to flee some, like, concentration camp or something. But I think it's worth going through a couple of tips. Like, remember, he tries to flee in the nighttime. And did you think that was a smart idea to run at night? Isn't that what happened during the Underground Railroad?
No, I thought it was a great idea. I'm really surprised at IS and the way they do operate and what they've been able to achieve as a daytime-only fighting force historically. That doesn't usually end well. But one thing that Ali did, and we could spend the next 2 hours talking about tactics, techniques, and procedures that he adopted that helped him stay alive. But one of them is the bombshell prospect. And what that is that when Rhodesia was fighting for its independence, up until 1979 when they became Zimbabwe, when the Rhodesians were fighting the terrorists and vice versa who were in their country, and terrorists, of course, is a term that we can talk about as far as whether the insurgents that they were fighting at the time, there's a technique called bombshell. What bombshell means is that if you come under attack and you're not a concerted unit that is ready to fight back, you all scatter and meet up at a rally point. That's either a primary and an alternate later on.
So it's
what
not
he
that
literally
there's an
did
explosion.
Was bombshell as an individual.
Okay, so it's not that there's an explosion happening anywhere. It's just that as humans, they scatter as pieces. So
it's
that
an
illustrative not in a large
term
group.
For that. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, because staying together in a large group, it's
not
probably
a good idea.
Human nature, right? But you are guaranteeing that you're going to be captured, because if they find the group, you're all caught. Whereas,
I'm just always, I'm amazed at these stories, Derek, where these people just march timidly to their demise. I mean,
yeah,
we see this
view
throughout
too.
Human history. Exactly. Throughout human. And by the way, what does it say about the public who is viewing them, who's not doing a thing about it?
That they're disarmed.
And they're feared.
Well, what do you mean? The public? The public isn't feared.
Yes, they are.
The government is feared.
No, because fear is the mind killer. Fear is what keeps government in business.
You mean they're
period.
Afeared. They're
exactly.
Like, they're afraid.
Exactly.
Okay, I got it. I was mistaking your meaning. Well, yeah, it does say that. I would like for them to end the fear. End the fear. That's one of the things Joe Jarvis is doing by injecting a little bit of comedy here into his article about how ISIS is doing things similar to the government here in the U.S. He reflects on an article from MSN News, where it says that, quote, reflecting Islamic State's assertion that it is a government rather than simply a militant group that happens to govern, Baghdadi has also separated military operations from civilian administration, assisting fighters only as police and soldiers. He says, rather than simply a militant group that happens to govern, what is the difference? That's the point he's trying to make. Men pointing guns run America, and men pointing guns at them run the Islamic State. Oh, so they have a slightly different brand of state control. They govern a little different, a little harsher, in methods we're unaccustomed to. Here in America, we prefer a kinder, gentler machine gun hand. It's all the same. And when you consent to being governed, I think this is your point, Bill, when you consent to being governed, you are just as likely to end up with ISIS as you are with the government of the USA. The problem is that we allow a certain group of people to initiate force against innocent civilians. And we say, it's okay for the sake of order or for the sake of government.
First, they came for the communist.
That's right. It's like the story of the hangman. It's never okay to allow aggression by one group of society, whether that unprovoked aggression ends with people beheaded for worshiping the wrong god or locked in a cage for smoking a joint.
You know, it's amazing to me, Derek, because Joe, like you, is a young man who's got just a great moral imagination, and he's an up-and-comer.
Definitely one to watch. The blog is vigilantvote.com, and great stories from there. We might share another one about the police losing military weapons. Whoops! It just keeps happening again and again. Sorry, Pentagon.
Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Have you recently defooed a cult that demands constant devotion to a figurehead? The guy who claims to be anti-IP, but uses IP to silence critics? That charming gentleman who thinks all your problems are from bad parenting? If you're tired of tithing to messiahs who demand a lot of your money, consider donating to the Freedom Fiends. We're more fun and don't require constant praise. In fact, we don't even like audience involvement. We talk, you listen, if you want. And if you send us a dollar, we won't complain. We'll dig it. That's freedomfiends.com.
Worms!
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
ZeroGov.com is here with me, Derek J, on the Freedom Fiends. You know, Gene Simmons declared rock and roll dead this week, but we're rocking and rolling here on the Fiends. Cruising right along, talking about how, police lost some of their military weapons provided by the Pentagon. Another great blog post by VigilantVote.com where Joe Jarvis writes that gun control advocates seem to want only police and military to have weapons. Think that's a good idea, Bill?
I don't think it's a good idea at all. You know, the Pentagon has actually banned 145 law enforcement agencies from receiving any of these, but that is a small fraction of the, I hope you're sitting down, 8,000 participating law enforcement departments in the program.
Whoa.
By the way, there's 19,000 police agencies in these United States from the local to the federal level. If that's not mind-boggling, I don't know what is, but a number of these places have simply lost accountability. Now, what's interesting about this that they didn't draw out in any of the articles that I read, though, is how does the Pentagon know they've lost them? What it means is this weaponry is on loan to these departments, apparently, and they have to provide probably a monthly, quarterly, or yearly accountability statement that has some kind of weight to it to the Pentagon to assure them that they still have these weapons. It's interesting to me because it doesn't make it a grant program so much as a loan program.
Yeah, that is interesting. How would they know that something is missing unless they're, you know, saying like, oh, hey, how's that Humvee we gave you doing? Oh, you lost it. What?
I mean, it amazes me because the DOD can't account for $1.5 trillion of inventory it allegedly has. Because all of the half dozen DOD accounting systems across the board, not only are they antiquated, ancient, and incompetent, much like the IRS attempts at computerizing themselves, but they can't talk to each other, and they don't do their job right.
Well, what Joe points out here is that criminals often get their guns from police departments, whether they're stolen or sold on the black market by corrupt cops. But there's something about becoming a police officer that makes someone magically immune to corruption or engaging in illegal activity.
You're engaging in satire of the highest order.
Yeah, I mean, come on. That's not how it is at all. It's even worse than criminals getting their hands on cops' revolvers, because this is military-grade equipment to the tune of billions of dollars from these different agencies. And they're missing military-grade Humvees. That's not something you misplace.
Of course they are. Of course they are. But, I mean, this
where'd
is
they
just
go?
You said corrupt cop a couple minutes ago. I think that's redundant. I refer to them as cockroaches every morning on Twitter. I tweet out 3 to 5 stories I find of cockroach abuse, brutality, violence, whatever the case may be.
Yikes.
That they've done in the past 24 hours.
What's your Twitter?
This is an epidemic. But, you know, I've said this before. The police state is an existential threat to individual human liberty. No political bad actor could do a thing to Derek or Bill if they didn't have an enforcement arm to do their evil bidding.
That's right. Like the evil enforcement arm of the local police department?
With Keene and what they did to you? Absolutely.
Yeah, but I don't know how much of that came from down on high from Obama or anything. I mean, this
Oh, no, I don't think so, but orders. I would suggest to you, though, that every one of those 19,000 departments is de facto and de jure federalized police departments. In Alabama recently, they took all nine of their law enforcement entities at the state level and glommed them into one entity. Tell me that's not dangerous.
Yeah, that is dangerous. But things are changing a little bit. You brought up Keene, and Keene does have a Bearcat. Back in 2011, myself Crazy. And others ran a campaign called Thanks, But No Tanks. And we were trying to raise awareness about police militarization, saying, hey, we really don't want these vehicles rolling down our streets, even if they are free from grants from the Department of Homeland Security. It's just not the kind of environment I want to live in, seeing police rolling through the street with a tank, even though you know, I don't believe in restrictions on the Second Amendment. And if people want to have a tank, fine. But I'm going to look at them a little funny as they're rolling down the street. And I'm going to be suspicious of them.
But if you're stealing other people's money to buy it, then you shouldn't be able to get it. And that's why the only people I support being disarmed are the government.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because they don't arm themselves, right? They don't use their own legitimately acquired capital to trade arms.
They train guns on the tax cattle, extort what they want from both you and I and our unborn grandchildren, and use that to do their evil deeds today.
Well, fortunately, there's one city councilor in Keene who has some sense. He's the lone councilman who raised an objection to the Bearcat when it came through in 2011. And now he's the lone voice again saying, we should get rid of this thing. The city council in Davis, California got rid of theirs. They had an MRAP, so it's a slightly different vehicle, but it's still a Department of Homeland Security gift wrapped up with a bow saying, here, this is free. All you have to do is some upkeep and do some training, replace some parts, and it's yours. It's like
MRAP. You know, MRATs are huge. They're about, depending on the variant, it could be 8 to 10 tons. But what I'm interested in with the MRAP program, which means mine-resistant vehicle, and what it's used for is it mine-proofs because the belly of it is in a V-shape to divert the blast. But it's very heavy, of course. But the maintenance on those things is extraordinarily expensive. And I wonder when the Pentagon loans these or grants these or however that works, because I'm not really certain how that works. Who does the maintenance on these things? I'm here to tell you, if a department has to, even a big department like LAPD, has to do their own maintenance, they're not going to like the bill.
Well, I was under the impression that Keene does have to do its own maintenance on the Bearcat, and they said it was going to be minimal, something like about $100 a year. So,
yeah,
if you can believe that, you know, government figures, government.
Look, you can't even do that on your own privately owned vehicle.
Right. Seriously. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's about $100 every year. Maintenance on a vehicle is going to be expensive, especially one that's a counterattack truck. I love that they emphasize the word rescue whenever they're bringing up this vehicle on the news, talking about the new rescue vehicle. Rescue's not in the name, but counterattack truck is.
Oh, it's just all foolishness. You know, this is in the name of officer safety, where they're more equal than others. You know, this is sort of a segue to, you heard about the legislation that they're proposing to limit body armor sales to civilians, where they would literally ban the ability of Derek and Bill to have body armor. Think of that. Think of the hubris of that, because what they're saying is, we don't want you to have the ability to passively defend yourself against aggression. Not actively, but passively.
Why do you think that would be? I mean, why would they limit the sale of body armor? That doesn't seem to make any sense to me.
It doesn't make sense to me, but it makes sense to a tyrant in the same fashion that the banning of cosmetically offensive weapons, also called assault weapons, would be, where they're trying to do something that would mitigate any kind of obstacle put up in front of their evil deeds and ambitions that they have in the government.
Is this
to me, that's the way I read it.
Well, that is concerning to me, even though I was not in the market for body armor. I actually was searching the other day, seeing like how much, what kind of fashionable body armor can you get? Like, can you get any that looks pretty good? They have some that looks pretty good.
They do. You can wear it under your clothes, but you know, I think they should manufacture kids' body armor because of the amount
of copper. What kind of world do you want to live in?
because of the amount of cockroach violence that's going on now, and I've said this in other shows, I stand a far greater chance of getting plugged by a cop than I do. Well, as a matter of fact, I stand a greater chance of being assaulted by a gray white shark and hit by lightning twice than being hit by a foreign-born terrorist. But wow, a far greater chance of being mauled or killed by a government cockroach. And I think you see children increasingly the victims of cockroach assaults. So why shouldn't children wear body armor to protect themselves from government violence?
Not a bad idea. Seems reasonable. I just wish it weren't. I just wish it weren't the state of things that we were even talking about children needing body armor to protect themselves from their local police. That's ridiculous. It's gone too far.
Ridiculous.
It's gone too far. Is that part of the government overreach, part of the Patriot Act expansion you were telling me about?
Well, it is indeed, and I think that you're going to give this to the audience as one of the notes when you do the show notes for this. But recently, Salon, of all things, which then they usually spend a whole lot of time supporting the state in everything that it does and its giant expansion.
Well, but plus they love to write articles about libertarians and why they're wrong.
And why they're wrong.
They're always a good laugh.
Two things came out this week that's more bad news from the Patriot Act. There's a decision to give national security orders unlimited breadth. I repeat, unlimited breadth. One, making it legal for the government to investigate Americans for activities protected under the First Amendment, and also the FBI's backdoor searches of Americans under Section 702 authority. To me, all this does is codify in the public eye what they've been doing all along, but the government has become so bold that what they've said is the Patriot Act gave us, through our own court's interpretations, an unlimited authority to make naked every human transaction that takes place on the part of private citizens, but not government individuals.
Wait a minute. Private citizens, but not government individuals? I didn't know that there was an exception for them.
Well, of course there is, Derek. Now, ask yourself this question. This is sort of like a thought experiment. The transparency of you to the government has to be 100%, correct?
Yes.
Now, the transparency in the converse, is that 100%?
No.
No. So that's my answer to your question.
Uh-huh. Yeah, like I can file a Freedom of Information Act request about basically anything I want, but then that information can then also be redacted, so they can hand me back a bunch of black ink.
That's right. They'll go through two laundry markers to make sure you can't read it.
Yeah, well.
So okay. That's it. I don't think we have to dwell on that too much, but it's just all. It's much like the Constitution. The Constitution codified slavery. All of a sudden, after the War of Northern Aggression, slavery is made illegal, but that's not what happened. What happened is we all ended up on the plantation thanks to the Lincolnian experiment.
That's interesting that you put it that way, and it seems like the tyrants, they act first and then codify the law later so that people are sort of ready for it. They're like, oh, how dare you? But then it's like, well, we've been doing this anyway for like 10 years, so how can you object?
I think that's right. You know, and Larkin Rose, who's probably one of the best expositors of liberty alive today, did a great video called Mr. Jones Plantation, where he talks about all the slaves are freed, and all of a sudden they notice after a few weeks and a few months, it ain't so different being free than it was being on the plantation.
Oh, yeah, that's a great story. So it's called Mr. Jones Plantation?
I think it is.
Okay,
I'll find it, and if I have to correct that, I will.
Okay, yeah, there's something like that. So these bear cats all around the country, there's got to be a way to peacefully resist them, to at least take control over local governments and say, send these things back, paint them pink, knock the tires out, turn them into a float for the 4th of July parade, do anything but use them.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hi, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. The internet has lowered the cost barrier for a worldwide radio show to a price approaching zero. Yet there is one arena where you still need thousands of dollars to approach the audio quality of the corporate media. Doing a live spoken show with more than one host in different geographic locations. Our program, Fiend Phone, will solve that problem, and it will be given away free. Go to fiendphone.com to see what you can do to help. That's FEENPHONE.com.
Meow, 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 meow. Liberty. It's Derek J. here and Bill Buepert. Hey, Bill.
It is I.
It is you. And we're talking about all things peace and freedom, terrorism related. The Keene Bearcat, trying to get rid of that, having a hard time. You know, the city councilor who brought it up, it was shot down by the mayor, filing it as informational, you know. So these Bearcats, these armored attack trucks that all these local police are getting from the Department of Homeland Security, they're like free gifts to the local police, and they turn Andy Griffiths into, I don't know, not Mayberry, but Fallujah.
I agree. Can I note one thing in the meta view of this whole thing with the Bearcat is that you mentioned there's one man in Keene who's voting against us, who's on the city council.
Yeah.
To me, it really shows the futility of voting. It really shows the futility of trying to use a political system against itself. Because as you and I have seen historically, contemporarily, and I would suggest into the future, a political system will not vote itself or limit itself in its power, but it will only maintain and expand itself at the expense of its constituency every time.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I mean, the Keene Bearcat discussion, when they initially bought it, the city council decided to acquire the tank, they had a city council meeting to discuss it. It was so packed that the fire marshal had to come down to regulate how many people could be in the building. What city councils have you been to? What town hall meetings have you been to where there's a fire marshal keeping people out because there's so many people packing the building? Not many that I've ever attended.
Well, I don't. I like voting. I mow my lawn with my teeth on the day of voting instead of going and casting a ballot against my fellow citizens.
Yeah, it does more good.
Well, voting's immoral.
Well, not only, well, it's not immoral when you vote for someone like James Cleveland, who's running here in Keene. I don't know if you heard, but there's Robin Hood of Keene.
You're opening up a can of worms here, because I think all voting is violence. Even if you're voting for a libertarian, you're still exercising violence.
Oh, come on. Here, I got to tell you, this guy, he's been making headlines on the Stop Free Keene website. They hate him. The headline is James Cleveland's campaign platform, YOLO Swag 420 Blaze It. And they say, quote, in an effort to be down with the kids, Robin Hood founder, Free Keene member and accountant James Cleveland has been canvassing the neighborhoods around Keene State College with these unintentionally hilarious attempts at pandering to Keene State College's infamous party scene. Note the endorsement of his Free Keene buddies and associates on the bottom backside. And it's got a great little flyer here. It looks like an invitation to a party. There's lots of colors. He's wearing some of those glow-in-the-dark bracelets and a backpack. Looks like he's probably at a rave or something. There's a group of people partying in the background. And real big, it says, "Vote Cleveland. Having a good time shouldn't be a crime." I can stand with that. So why wouldn't you want to vote Cleveland?
Because I'm not going to vote. Every time I pull that lever, what I'm doing is I'm saying I'm legitimizing a system that uses force and violence to form society instead of peaceful cooperation and the ability to opt out. That's why.
Well, what if he was a candidate who's only running on three different platforms? Legalize marijuana, lower the drinking age to 18, and bars stay open longer. You still against using force for those causes?
I'm against any use of government force, and I'm against the legalization of marijuana because I don't want the government to be involved in it at all. I want it to be decriminalized. I don't want the government involved in a drinking age because I don't want them to determine for a civil population what age they can drink at, whether it's a four-year-old drinking wine at the dinner table with his family or maybe at their local Catholic church or whatever the case may be. I don't want the government in my knickers. I don't want them in my wallet. And I don't want them having the ability to use force to make me do what they want me to do.
Well, what about the people who still believe in this system? What about them? Those college students who are saying to themselves, I wish I could smoke pot and not get in trouble for it, or drink a beer while walking down the street.
I think they should read history more.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know what history would teach us about ending prohibition. I just know that voting kind of works here in New Hampshire, and it's strange for me to say that. I used to swear off voting, saying it was evil, it was bad. But then look at all my peaceful freedom friends who go and run for election. Ian Freeman's running for governor. Wouldn't that be a different world? He could end prohibition. He could end caging peaceful people by the state police. We'll be back with more stories of peaceful resistance on The Freedom Fiends. Worms.
Hey, there's some Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you're listening to The Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Meow. Meow, meow, meow.
Meow. Worms. Your kids about pledging allegiance?
As a home educator, we never pledged allegiance.
Ooh. Seditious. You know, you're supposed to do that or you're a bad American. You have to hold your hand over your heart, then give the Nazi Heil. At least that's what kids did in the 40s, right? And then they
prior to 1939, it became unfashionable to hold your arm up like that. So after that, they revised the pledge.
Oh, okay. My mistake. So you no longer hold your hand out towards the flag. Just cover your heart. You take your hat off. You show respect. You know, it makes our nation great. To say
you show respect for your jailer. That's what it comes down to. You're saluting the prison guards.
So be real. Did you say the Pledge of Allegiance when you were growing up?
Oh, absolutely. I was in the government schools. No, I was in the government schools, and and I didn't know any better. And I was reared to be a good little statist. And of course I did.
Did you know I didn't say the Pledge of Allegiance starting? Well, I guess it was pretty late, junior year of high school. I felt pretty great. I saw someone else do it. Someone else just sat. They didn't stand up. They didn't put their hand over their heart. They just sat there while everyone else did that. And the teacher didn't say anything. Someone pointed out and complained, hey, they're not standing. They're not saying the pledge. The teacher just said, no, they don't have to. And,
isn't that interesting? Where people, it's sort of like, you know, we're creating a snitch nation.
Oh, yeah.
Where they incentivize that kind of behavior.
Well, they wanted...
It's so un-American.
They wanted to see the slave violence. They wanted to see the authoritarian come down on the bad slave who didn't recite the pledge. That's what the person really wanted, I think, if we're honest.
Speaking of slaves, I sent Larkin Rose's link for Mr. Jones Plantation.
Yes.
So that you can post that in the show notes. That'll be splendid.
That will be added to the show notes so that people can see another awesome video from Larkin Rose. He does a great job of telling stories that help philosophy sink in. So
I think there's no one like him in the Liberty Movement.
Well, no doubt. There is no one like Larkin Rose. That's a fact. But this story comes from Psychology Today, of all places. Not a place you would expect to find anti-state rhetoric. It's not Lou Rockwell or Daily Anarchist or something. This is Psychology Today, and they're talking about serious issues arise when we expect daily pledges of nationalism from children. Is this representing a turning tide? Well, the question begins, are you a bad American if you refuse to recite the Pledge of Allegiance? Are you a bad parent if you encourage your child to opt out of the pledge in school? Not at all. In fact, sitting out the Pledge of Allegiance and encouraging your children to do so as well can be seen as an affirmation of certain important values that are sadly lacking in modern America. Wow. This from Psychology Today, I'm shocked.
Wait, this from the same organization that has something called oppositional defiant disorder, which you and I and Michael and all the fiends suffer from?
Likely, yeah. They're going to have to work that one out. How do they have this coexisting belief that opting out of the pledge is a good thing, but oppositional defiant disorder is a bad thing?
Yeah, I don't get it. I'm glad that they're starting to come up with this kind of skepticism, which is healthy in any scientific environment, especially a pseudoscientific environment like psychology and psychotherapy and such. And it reminds me of all the work, Derek, over the past fortnight that Michael has done concerning the Stefan Molyneux stuff that's been coming out and coming to the surface, because he relies heavily as a cornerstone of his belief system on psychotherapy, psychology, and that kind of thing.
And you think that's a bad thing?
I absolutely do. I belong to the Thomas Sasse school. He wrote a book in the 60s called The Myth of Mental Illness. And I think that for the most part, there may be mental illness out there, but the creature that we see today that is the American Psychological Association, much like the American Medical Association, is a creature wholly owned and subsidized by the state and doing the state's bidding. So, yes, I do think that in the whole, in the balance, it has deleterious effects on us more so than not.
Well, it doesn't sound like they're discouraging critical thinking here. It says, at a minimum, parents should talk with their kids about the pledge, what it means, what it doesn't mean, and even its history. For starters, kids should understand that the exercise is voluntary, because many schools don't inform them of this.
I'm just astonished, Derek, that an organization like this would come, because it's sort of like the AMA coming out and saying, you know, natural healing is cool.
yeah, it is. It's exactly like that. They're helping people break the matrix, whereas probably they wouldn't do that in the past. It's quite serious.
And remember, these are the same organizations that look with positive adoration at the Milgram experiment, the Stanford experiment, and it's sort of like conjoined marriage in the state with the Stockholm syndrome. And say, so, that's a good way to organize society.
But not all people who believe in psychology are hardcore statists. I mean, you brought up Stefan Molyneux yourself. He's an anarchist, and he believes in psychology.
Oh, and I'm not saying that you wouldn't find outliers or bell curve to left or right.
Yeah.
We're going to find a few. But could I say categorically that most people who are members of the APA and are in that, you know, in those professions tend to be statists? Yes, I could say that categorically.
Hmm. Well, they bring up some legitimate problems with the Pledge of Allegiance. If they're not seeing the state for what it really is, people pointing guns at each other in order to gain control over a minority population, a minority of people using guns to gain control over a majority population, they bring up some legitimate concerns, like the loyalty oath problem is one they bring up. They say, no matter how much you love your country, you could question the wisdom of any recitation that essentially amounts to a loyalty oath. To be good citizens, we must visibly and publicly pledge our allegiance? But even children on a daily basis?
But Derek, here's what's frustrating to me. I've studied the 19th century abolitionists who were opposed to slavery in the United States, and I'm going to write a book about it, as a matter of fact, next year. But they ask all the right questions, but they never brought it to its logical conclusion, which is you not only free the black slave, you free everybody. You get them all off the plantation. You don't only think that chattel slavery is bad, you think that all slavery is bad. And that's the beef I have with the psychological organizations and the psychology and psychotherapy organizations, is that they're asking this little question right here, but don't you dare not get a script to get your prescription drug that they're going to give you to put you in the state of mind they think you should get, and don't you dare defy them on, let's say, having one of your family members committed or being committed yourself or whatever the case may be, they're all about the state then.
Yeah,
but and they're all about their state subsidy.
Can't you just let them have this one?
I'll let them have this one, but that's it.
They're wrong about a lot of stuff, but they've at least got this one right. They've also they're also criticizing promoting nationalism. They said, we can love our country while still being skeptical of nationalism. We can agree that America is a marvelous place from sea to shining sea, and that the principles upon which it was founded are worthy of exaltation, but that doesn't mean we should constantly encourage widespread feelings of nationalism. History shows that national pride in America and elsewhere can be overdone, and that it can lead to militarism and a diminished appreciation of outsiders. Well, this is spot on.
It is spot on, but I don't know where it came from.
It just astonishes me
because it is not a part and parcel of the cloth that they put before everybody else.
Yeah, someone hacked Psychology Today. It's also, it points out that it's got racist and sexist roots. And this I wasn't aware of until recently, but the article writes, liberty and justice are fine values, but they are hardly a comprehensive statement of important American values. When Francis Bellamy, a socialist, originally wrote the pledge in 1892, he considered including the values of equality and fraternity in the recitation, but he was discouraged.
Much like the French Revolution.
Did they do that?
Equality, liberty. Yes, and Robespierre created the totalitarian state that laid out the groundwork and blueprint for what we would see in the West for the next 250 years.
Well, it seems that too many Americans, particularly those in leadership positions, were opposed to equality for women and African Americans. Whoops!
Equality, I believe, not in equality of outcomes. But I don't believe, I mean, I believe in equality of people having the same opportunities, but equality of outcomes, equality of incomes, equality of everybody's going to be the same and everybody will wear the same clothes and everybody will think the same way. I don't believe in that at all.
Thank goodness we're all different. I wouldn't want to be the same as anyone else.
Now repeat after me. We are all individuals.
We are all individuals. There's also the under God problem. This, you know, people don't want to say under God. I get that. I don't know what that alone is enough reason for many people to opt out. There's also rote recitation problem. This is a psychological concept. In an age where critical thinking is hardly a widespread phenomenon, it's hard to see how the act of reciting any pledge in unison with a large group does much good. Even if the Pledge of Allegiance were a perfect statement of national values, which it's not.
But Derek, it doesn't only do no good whatsoever. It's evil, because you'll notice that everybody says the United States is, not these United States are. With that juxtaposition of those three grammatical terms in that phrase, it makes people linguistically assume that a central government is legitimate when that's not the way it should be.
Wow, that is so worth repeating. So, yeah, the United States is versus the United States are. There's
these
a big
United
distinction
States
there.
Are.
Yeah, these
it's
United
a huge
States
distinction,
are.
But it's a distinction because our linguistics and our language forms our critical thinking patterns to a large extent, not a whole extent. And what that does is people unconsciously presuppose the United States is. They don't think it through to first principles, and they say the United States is, oh, it must be this unitary octopus-like organization that emanates from D.C. to guarantee that all of us will have a happy life.
Yeah, but that's not true.
It's not true at all. But it's part of the, I guess you can call it linguistic manipulation. That's what you could call it.
Well, I'm pleased by this article from Psychology Today. They bring up a Declaration of Independence. That's their final point. They say that the non-participating student is making a statement of sorts, not a statement of disloyalty, but a statement that tells others he or she will not be heard and given words to recite. The intelligent, independent thinker knows what her values are, and certainly does not need a daily government-sponsored exercise to define them or instill them. Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Works. Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, tiny town built by sex offenders, plus the Queen of England shivers as Scotland separates, all that and more. Hey, Bill, did you know that Atlas Shrugged 3 is coming out this Friday in theaters, September 12th?
I had no idea, but I'm glad you're flogging them.
That's true. It's not a plug. It's just like, I like them. I liked the movies. I saw them. I'm not paid to say this. I saw them. I enjoyed them. I read the books. I loved them. Changed my life. Changed the world. And isn't Atlas Shrugged considered one of the most influential books of all time next to the Bible?
I think you're right.
Yeah.
And I think I revealed to you earlier that I haven't read it.
Yeah,
I'm probably one of the only guys in Liberty.
You say you're not a Randian. What does that mean?
It means that I'm not a person who belongs to a cult.
Ouch. So, okay.
Any other questions?
Well, Rand is the author of Atlas Shrugged, and another book which you did read, The Fountainhead.
Yes.
She touches on the themes of objectivism. Isn't that her thing?
It is, not mine.
But it's not your thing. Why not?
Not my thing. I've got a variety of reasons, but I don't want to alienate any objectivist or Randian listeners that we have in the audience by talking about my personal peccadilloes about it.
Oh, come on. No one's a Randian.
We're all in the we're all in the same boat here, where we're seeking a stateless society. But the three things that I object to is her wholesale elimination of religion as a positive moral ethic in human civilization.
Okay.
Number two, her non-brooking of any discontent whatsoever, and the fact that she thought, third, the fact that she thought everything she said was holy writ, in that if, refer to number two, you did disagree with her, you'd get kicked out of her personal inner circle or her cult and considered to be excommunicated.
Seems fair. She can't do that stuff after she's dead. She's got to do it while she's alive.
Look, sacred cows make the best burgers, and cross-examination is the engine of truth. So if we don't bear up under scrutiny what our ideas are, then maybe our ideas aren't as powerful as we think.
Well, my beef with Rand was just that she seemed to get that government does a poor job of everything, gets in the way of free trade, individuals improving the world, serving one another, making the world a better place, except when it came to courts and police. She was like, well, you got to hang on to those courts and police because they're doing so great.
She's a minarchist, and please refer to the title of my book on Amazon.
All right, very good. And what is the title of your book on Amazon?
Zero Gov, Limited Government, Unicorns, and Other Mythological Creatures.
Boom. There it is. So let's talk about this tiny town. Speaking of the weird side effects of government, one of them is that there is now a tiny town in Florida that's a spiritual safe haven for 200 criminals and their relatives, all living side by side in a place called Miracle Village. It's just outside the Everglades in South Florida and was established just 5 years ago by an evangelical pastor, Dick Witherow. And this place is fascinating. I learned about it through dailymail.uk, Mail Online. And it's an organization or a town that was pretty much founded by sex offenders, registered sex offenders, who can live without judgment and repent for their sins. What do you think of this idea, Bill?
You know, I've got to grok it, and one beef I have with the sexual offender system in the United States is something that we talked about in an earlier conversation, which is that in certain states, if a 17-year-old man decides to have sexual congress with a 16-year-old girl and they've been involved in the relationship, or put a boy there or a girl there, girl on girl, boy, whatever the case may be, they could become sex offenders for life as a result of a consenting sexual relationship very close to what the state considers maturation.
Both of them?
No, just one of them.
Okay.
The one who was cried foul upon, or usually the older of the parties.
Right. I was in jail with one of these guys.
That's absurd.
Yeah, I was in jail with a guy who, he is 19 years old, so just a young kid, and he was accused of having sexual relations with another young man who was his boyfriend. The partner was 16, and the 16-year-old's mother found out and screamed foul, and then next thing you know, this 19-year-old is charged as being a sex offender, even though it was a consensual relationship to begin with. So they lock him up, throw him in a cage? What good does that do anybody?
So that's my only beef. I do think that there is genuine evil in child molestation and things like that. There's no doubt that that's the case. And these people forming their town, good for them.
Well, I want to get into what's going on in this town. It seems like a fascinating place. It seems like it's born completely out of a government intrusion. I mean, they can't live anywhere else, right?
Yeah.
We've got that, the tiny house, plus the queen is shaking in her boots. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
You've heard of shinybadges.com, but check out the new Causes tab. Every item includes a donation to a worthwhile Liberty project. Buy the Silk Road pin to contribute to the Ross Ulbricht Legal Defense Fund, or buy the Bitcoin Not Bombs t-shirt to contribute to Hoodie the Homeless 2014. Pick from many more. Go to causes.shinybadges.com and get yourself some quality Liberty products that not only start a conversation, but also put your money where your heart is. Plus, get a free gift when you pay with Bitcoin. Causes.shinybadges.com.
Freedom Fiends, welcome back. Worms. You know, the Queen is afraid. She's afraid of losing control. Why is that? Well, the Scottish separatists are now in the lead as Westminster convulses. That the story from DailyMail.uk. Are you concerned about Scotland's independence, Bill?
You know, I'm not concerned about it, because what I'd like to see is, instead of 218 nations recognized by the United Nations around the world, I'd like to see 218,000 or maybe even 6 million or whatever it takes to get us to a devolution. One thing we know is this, is that Northern Ireland has sort of been on the path to breaking up. Ayr, which is the island of Ireland, got its free state in 1922. What we have here is England becoming a little less England than it has been over the last 800 years. Will Scotland become a paradise of non-statism and abolitionism? Absolutely not. It's just going to be another socialist mud pit attached to England.
Well, who cares? Why do they even want independence? It says that the YouGov poll put support for independence at 51%. And that's all they need to win, right? So those other 49% who don't want independence, they lose. Tough luck.
You know, the only reason I'm watching this with any interest whatsoever is the ramifications that it will have for these United States, and a further consideration of why secession is not the exception, but the rule in history, and why being governed from Mordor on the Potomac in D.C. is an undesirable situation. The reason the Queen is concerned about this is she's concerned about losing tax cattle. That's what it all comes down to.
I don't know. That's not what the Daily Mail says. Here they say that the Queen held talks with David Cameron yesterday amid panic at the prospect of the end of the 300-year-old Union. The Union must be preserved.
remember that union is a result of the Battle of Culloden in 1746, when these brave and vicious Scots, who had been fighters up until that point, simply became poodles for the British Empire for the continuing years afterwards.
How could I remember that? I never even knew that.
Well, now you know
it. Well, the Queen, who is thought to strongly favor the union, will be in Scotland September 18th. The day it could vote to break away from the rest of the UK. You think she's trying to say something with her presence there? She always looks magnificent, by the way, the Queen.
She does look magnificent. She's magnificently put out every time that you see her, especially, you know, as her age. She's regal, and you could tell that there's a keen intelligence in her eyes.
She designed her. You would appreciate this as a person who appreciates clothing and fashion and presentation. She designed her own theme, like that, you know, that hat with the, like, unibody dress-looking suit thing, gloves, the pointed shoes, and a purse. Like, that's always her thing. That's always been the look of the Queen. It didn't used to be that way before her, you know, always dresses and crowns, and like this Queen Elizabeth II, is that who it is? She's the one who you know, made the signature look of the Queen. And I wonder if the newer Queen, whoever comes after her, is going to inhabit that.
I think that the newer one will probably be a little more contemporary. But getting back to why the separation of Scotland is important, Scotland's going to become nothing more than yet another socialist satrap on the map.
Why? How do you know?
Oh, well, here's what I'd suggest you do. Go to the Scottish Independence Party and check out what their platform is. And not only that, go to the concern of Scottish voters who are either for it or against it, who say, but will I lose my UK pension? And the answer from the United Kingdom right now in London is that, oh no, don't worry. If Scotland separates from England, you'll still receive your pension.
What?
That's what they're worried about.
That's baloney. I mean, what's independence if it's not financial independence?
Well, you and I view this in a way that most others don't, especially in England.
Well, that's a really weird thing to call independence. I mean, the Queen could be all kinds of happy about this. They don't. I mean, does she really even lose tax cattle?
She absolutely does. She loses a considerable amount of tax cattle. I mean, the tax rate in England is just vicious. Much like these United States, but yeah, it's awful over there. You know, they pay, I think it's they pay almost $10 a gallon for fuel.
Wow.
Because of taxes. Because their tax is nearly 77% on their fuel. Why do you think their cars are so microscopic?
Well, why would the Queen and England continue to pay out pensions for people in Scotland if they want to break free and be independent? Why would they continue to pay? I don't get it.
I don't have the answer to that.
Yeah, it's just weird.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just very
politics.
Odd. Why is the Queen concerned about Scotland leaving? Because it's her watch, Derek.
Bribes. Oh, because it's her watch. It happened. Yeah,
like it happened during her reign. Yes.
Well, I don't see it as a bad thing.
When a royal family loses parts of their realm, is that a positive attribute in the history books?
I guess not, but it's the way of history, right? We've got more countries now than like ever before.
Indeed, it is.
So
that's the way you and I view it.
So who's going to be next? The next country to declare independence or to break free, will it happen within the U.S.? Will it be the
UK? I hope it's Arizona, yes.
You think it's going to be Arizona?
Or New Hampshire. Who knows?
Oh, man. I hope so. Right around the corner, I hope.
Hey, all it takes is one. Just one state to say, enough is enough. Katie, bar the door. There's going to be a cavalcade.
Can they even really do that? I mean, Vermont has been talking about it for a long time, and they have a serious secessionist party. They have people who make it onto the ballot.
You know, I don't think it'll happen politically, but I do think it can happen philosophically, where people finally say, you know what, question authority is sexy, but I'm simply not going to obey anymore.
What kind of example do we have for that? I mean, I'm familiar with the political type of separation where there's people in a state house who say, we've got fancy pieces of paper and we're going to sign our names and say that we're separate now. I mean, how does it work if you're doing it without politics?
I think if you're a non-voter, you're a secessionist. And Henry David Thoreau pretty much based Walden on that entire concept of saying the only marker of true freedom is my ability to opt out and your inability to tell me what to do. Because in the end, we have to ask ourselves this question, Derek. If you can make me pay for your health care, can you make me pick your cotton too?
Well, That's an interesting question. I don't know. I'll have to ponder on that. I hope not.
Well, the question is, yes, they can.
Oh.
That's the answer. There,
you
know,
you have a creative way of describing yourself. You say you're an anti-abolitionist. Is that right?
No.
What is it?
Come on, Derek. What's an abolitionist. I'm not.
No. Right. You're an abolitionist. Sorry, I got confused.
I'm an abolitionist.
You're not an anti. You're an abolitionist. And what does that mean? When people say, okay, so you're an abolitionist, isn't that only during slavery in the 1800s? What's that mean today?
Well, what that means today is I'm opposed to all forms of human slavery. Which forms do you support? That's my
repost. So you turn it around.
You ask me.
You turn it around on the questioner.
Yes, because what it all comes down to is this, is that in New Hampshire, where you live in your little burg, sort of like here where I am in Arizona.
I live in the Shire. The state is New Hampshire.
The government comes in and they take, and I'm putting a mark on the wall here. I'm just throwing clay up on the wall. They take 30% of your stuff. And if you object to that 30%, because they don't knock on your door, they just come in and grab it. If you object to that, they put a boot on your neck and say, I'm putting a 10% surcharge on that. And maybe, just maybe, I'll fine you. Maybe, just maybe, I'll kidnap you. I'll cage you. And if you resist, I'll maim you and kill you. That is slavery. No matter how you look at it, that is slavery, because I don't have the ultimate marker of freedom, which is opting out and say, you know what? I don't want any part of your national socialist health care, so I'm not going to participate. If punitive means are used against my refusal, I am a slave.
Do you have a lot of success with that type of argument when people are asking you, you know, when you say, what sort of freedom do you support? Does anyone answer you with like, oh, well, I support... you know, taxes or whatever. What do they say?
Yeah, I get that response all the time. But if anything, you know, what you and I and Michael and everyone else in the audience, I suppose, for the most part, and the fiends are doing, is we are philosophically terraforming the planet one disobedient surf at a time.
Nice.
That's our job. That's what we're doing. So if they don't agree with me then, and I would be suspect of their intellectual veracity if they agreed with me immediately, unless they were an abolitionist like me and had studied it.
Right.
I doubt that. But if over time they said, you know what, I've evolved and I've come to the conclusion that the ownership of other human beings is repugnant and I morally object to it, and I look at them and say, you are my brother.
Well, I'm fascinated that you can denounce activists and abolitionists, fellow abolitionists who are running for offices, you know, to
Absolutely.
Fill these state houses. You denounce that as a failure, that political means shall not be used. It's violence. And it's hard for me to agree with you, because I see it working here in New Hampshire, where they've been able to repeal bad laws about restrictions on what sort of knives people can carry. Wouldn't it be great if James and Ian went to the state house or the governor's office, and then they could get rid of those restrictions on the Second Amendment that make New Hampshire a shall issue state instead of a constitutional carry state? I mean, wouldn't it be great if there were anarchists all throughout the state house just repealing bad laws? You don't think that would be an awesome thing?
No, because I conflated with the same business of unicorn farts and fairy dust.
But it's happening.
But once they repealed the state? And by the way, how do you do that politically? How do you repeal the state? Because in the end,
all you're doing with anarchists, and you say, we're done. We're all leaving. We're going.
Sorry,
home.
It's a serial killer beauty contest, and somebody will fill the void.
I don't know what that means.
Well, what it means is that you and I disagree, Derek.
Well, I'm just saying it's working. I mean, this is one place where I've seen it work, and it's an anomaly. I wouldn't say the same thing in New Jersey. I wouldn't say like, oh, yeah, you know, there's people getting elected and they're really going to change things. But
Derek, I'm here to tell you that it's not working if all they're doing is legalizing things, because what they must do is decriminalize and deregulate things, because until it's off the government's books, it will not be out of the government's claws for whoever succeeds them if they happen to leave office.
So I guess it's got to involve a multi-pronged solution. If we're going to have real freedom in our lifetime, it's going to be people like what you're talking about, declaring personal independence without politics. And I guess that means what? Growing your own food, providing your own fuel, stuff like that?
No, you know what that means is it means that if Derek makes great mead and I do great gunsmithing and you need gunsmithing and I like mead, you and I in a peaceful cooperative community are going to barter or trade in specie or whatever currency you and I decide on, and we're going to live free.
We are going to live free, you and me, Bill. Me and those 200 sex offenders over in Miracle, Florida. We'll see. I want to know more about this tiny town. I think they've been born of bad government. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Ross Ulbricht was arrested by the FBI in 2013 and charged with victimless crimes in relation to allegedly operating the Bitcoin-based Silk Road black market. He has been in a prison cell awaiting trial ever since. If he did it, he's a hero for making the black market a safer place. If he did not, he's a man wrongfully accused. Either way, if you love freedom and want to end the war on drugs, Ross and his family need your support. You can learn more and help fund his defense at FreeRoss.org. That's FreeRoss.org.
This is Redemption in the Third Act. We bring you peaceful, happy stories to calm the hamster in your brain. Hey, Bill. I can't believe what the Scottish National Party actually believe about the...
Did you take a look at it?
Yeah, they want to keep all their socialized medicine, yes, all their social... Do. Yeah, I mean, they're total... They're going to collapse even faster than England.
I think it's a race to the bottom, that's as all socialist ridiculous. Enterprises are.
That's going to be interesting to watch. An interesting horse race. Who will collapse first? Although I don't want anyone to collapse. I want to see happiness and prosperity for all people. But you that know, happens
I've gone
with freedom.
To, I've gone to Highland Games, and I've gone to Scottish festivals and things like that. And it's a great time, but they don't realize how socialist their contemporaries are back in England. I mean, it amazes me.
Yeah, and I guess that's what that's one of the things they're afraid of. They're afraid of losing their support network. They're afraid of losing the queen, right? They want to lose the figurehead of the queen, but not all of her delicious goodies. We're still going to get all our goodies, right? Do we get our pensions?
Yeah. You know, Bastiat told us that the state is a great fiction by which one group of people live at the expense of another. And what the Scottish think is what people in the U.S. think, that their neighbor is their property.
Well, I think what's hilarious about any socialized country or socialist country is they're all gung-ho, like, yeah, free stuff. And then they're like, wait, I pay for this? They don't even realize, oh, okay, so all those, you know, the pensions that we're receiving, we actually pay for those. Although in the case of Scotland, it seems like they won't, which is really confusing and weird to me. That's one of the unique cases where they actually get something for nothing.
It's incredible, and I'll say, if I get a chance tonight, I'll be sure to send you the link to that. But, you know, this is supposed to be redemption. And I mentioned earlier about the philosophical terraforming of Earth, one disobedient surf at a time.
Yes.
That you and I and Michael and everyone else is doing. That's what this all comes down to. It isn't a political fight. What we're fighting for is people's hearts and minds so that they finally come to the conclusion that self-ownership is one of the highest precepts of not only being a good person, being a right person, but being a successful person. Because if you constantly strive to only live at the expense of others, that pretty much makes you a sociopath and psychopath. And unless you run for office or are a government employee, you're not going to fare very well in the business world.
Well, what business world? Isn't the entire world just the government sector now?
You know what? I'm going to give you that, unless you're in the underground economy.
Yeah, that's right. That's where I find a lot of hope, is the underground economy. You know, Charlie Shrem this week pled guilty. Charlie Shrem was the former CEO of BitInstant.com, a website that allowed people to exchange cash for bitcoins. He pled guilty to dealings with the Silk Road. He was arrested in December 2013, like a string of arrests.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though they could take down one guy like Charlie Shrem or Ross Ulbricht, who allegedly helped manage the Silk Road still exists. The black market still exists. And it's gotten even stronger since. There's a new idea called Open Bazaar. Have you heard about this?
I have.
Yeah, it's an open, decentralized marketplace that could totally, I mean, it could totally change the world, and that's no understatement. It's that, or no overstatement, rather. The government can't interfere with businesses, with individuals, when they're trading across long distances over the internet. I mean, there's just no way for them to get in between to merchants and customers. So,
I agree. You know, it was a mere 220 years ago that slavery was recognized as an evil by most folks because of William Wilberforce in England. 220 years. That's a very small percentage of how long we've been on the earth as erect human beings forging these civilizations 6,000 to 7,000 years ago,
yes!
Or 8,000 years ago. So there's so much hope for the future because 500 years ago, everybody thought slavery's cool. Who's going to build the roads?
That is such a good sign. You're right. 500 years ago, they thought we couldn't do it without these gods of the state. 200 years ago, we abolished some forms of slavery. Now we're getting around to the rest of it. Yeah, chattel slavery. That's right. Now we're getting around to the rest of it. Living free. And I think the internet has a lot to do with that, too. Connecting people, bringing good ideas to the top, rising like cream. Well, I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain tonight. I don't know. How are you feeling, Bill?
I'm feeling great.
Mm.
I had a great time.
Yeah, I'm nice and relaxed and ready for the free future. Here it comes. I'm buckling my seatbelt. Strapping in for an Ayn Rand Futuretopia. Just kidding. We'll be back with more fiends tomorrow night. Michael Jean will be back to beam liberty directly into your brain.